Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we'll take some of your calls now, doctors, on when you find yourself in the position of going from healer to dealer, as Dr. Siddhartha Mukherjee called it in his New York Times Magazine piece last week, and how he dealt with it was also, you know, the kind of achingly, ethically self-reflective center of that piece. Have you been in situations like that? What can people learn from it as we try to kick the national opioid epidemic? Charlotte in Kingston, you're on WNYC. Hello, doctor. Thank you for calling in.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to say that I think what happened with Dr. Mukherjee's situation, perhaps it was earlier on in his career,
and he
did not have good boundaries with this patient, and sometimes it takes a while to develop those skills. So when prescribing controlled substances, you never want to let the patient take control of the treatment and dictate what you are going to prescribe as a doctor. And that can be very difficult because patients have a lot of, especially patients seeking controlled substances, often are in bad situations in life to begin with. And then on top of that, they, as many people addicted to substances, can be very manipulative with the provider.
Yes, and so, I was surprised to read in that article how frequently this patient was paging him. Like, she had his pager number and could just call it in the middle of when he was in surgery and all kinds of things.
Right. So she should have been told and asked to sign a contract. That's what we use now and have for, I've been using drug contracts for over a decade, that behavior is not allowed. And if it continues, the patient will be discharged. And then you try and extinguish drug-seeking behaviors. So it really, in this case, that wasn't done. And in offices I've worked in, for example, patients on controlled substances, they're not allowed to march into the office and create a distraction. They have to keep appointments. And the goal now is really to reduce the amount of controlled substances, including not just opiates, but benzodiazepines like Valium and Klonopin are also a huge problem.
Charlotte, thank you so much. Really interesting about some of the mechanisms that have developed to control that kind of situation. Rebecca in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, doctor.
Hi, Brian. I wanted to share just the fact that looking back now on my medical school career, I graduated from Mount Sinai Medical School in 1999, and we felt so proud that we were learning a whole pain management curriculum. We were told that medicine had really not done right by people with pain and that we needed to do better, and we needed to freely prescribe opioids. And basically now we learn in 2018 that a fast one was pulled on the whole medical establishment by the pharma industry. And I'm furious. I'm furious at how complicit we inadvertently became. I don't prescribe a tremendous number of opioids. I'm an OBGYN. It's mostly for post-op pain, and we give very small quantities.
Mm-hmm.
But when you learn that a lot of addicts started with their 30 Percocet after a cesarean section, it's really horrifying to realize we were ignorant.
And
we remain ignorant. We still have drug reps trying to, you know, fight their ways into our offices every day. And
really?
People mock me for my reluctance to have them anywhere near me. But I really feel that this has been a crime.
Are the drug reps trying to counter the messages that the public health officials are trying to put out there now?
The drug reps are not physicians. The drug reps are college educated, but they have very minimal medical background. You can very quickly undermine the things that they're saying if you just do a tiny bit of reading. And they are victims, too. They've been fed a bill of sale by the pharma companies, and they've been told what they should say to us. And sometimes it's very deceptive. They're often in other offices marketing things off-label. And with the opioids, there's clear evidence that they were told to sell drugs as less addictive than they were. And honestly, I'm more angry that my professors in medical school were selling us that these drugs were less addictive than they really were, because they were buying the information that was being fed to them by pharma.
Rebecca, thank you so much. An important contribution. David in Dumont, New Jersey. You're on WNYC. Hi, David.
Hi, how are you?
Good. You're a chiropractor, AC?
I am a chiropractor, and I'm listening to the conversation, and I recognize how difficult the problem is. I deal with patients who are constantly on pain medication, and some of them, yes, are addicted to opioids. I think that you're asking, not a bad question, but I think you're asking an incomplete question. The question isn't why doctors prescribe what they prescribe. They did it because they were told to do it. They did it because they were trained to do it. The question I should be asked is, why are we not seeking alternatives when they're available, but they're more difficult? Changing a person's lifestyle, changing what they're eating, changing their exercise pattern, making certain that they're getting appropriate rest, all of those decrease inflammation and limit the need for opioids. Yeah, you still may need painkillers sometimes, and I'm not against that. But the truth is that most of these drug addictions didn't have to happen if the doctor actually took the time to know the patient, know their lifestyle, and do the appropriate things. In other words, really be a doctor for them.
Right, and that's a really good chiropractor-style addition to the conversation to make sure that the medical establishment is incorporating lifestyle factors to control pain, not just drugs. Two generations of the alternative medicine universe having this conversation with the establishment medical universe. Is it still amazing to you how little it's been incorporated?
I don't like to say stunned, but I do get angry, yes, because my patients will still come into me and they'll say, I went to the doctor. They said, I absolutely have to have these painkillers. It is the only way to treat this. And I treat these things every day of my life. It's frustrating. And again, the heart of most of these doctors is fabulous. I have nothing against the heart of the doctor who wants to help the patient. But Big Pharma is very involved, and the medical community is beholden to them, and they're being given information which is incomplete, unfortunately.
David, thank you so much for your contribution. And Lena in West Orange, you're on WNYC. Hello, doctor.
Yes, hi, this is Lena. Yeah, I am actually a psychiatrist, and I also practice hospice and palliative medicine, so I do prescribe a lot of narcotics. I do agree, and I've been doing this. I also graduated from Sinai in the 90s, and I've been doing this for 25 years. So I do agree with almost everything that all your previous callers said. One thing I'd like to add is 20 years ago, pain became a fifth vital sign, which the physicians were judged on, and you've all have seen those pain scales with that smiley face.
Yes.
And the expectation
on a scale from 1 to 10, where would you place your pain? Right.
Right. Exactly. Right. So the expectation was every patient discharged from the hospital, discharged from a surgery, discharged from a dentist's office, discharged from the emergency room had to point to the smiley face with zero pain, or else the hospitals and the providers will be penalized financially and, you know, regulations and all sorts of things. So what is the best way to get that zero smiley face? High doses narcotics. So with our best intentions as providers, we did cause a generation
yes.
of patients who are drug dependent.
So, Lena, is the solution, well, is there a pharmacological solution that is, take 4 ibuprofen instead of the Vicodin, or is it going to have to be, sadly, because we don't have any better medical medication type solution, sadly, sorry, folks, in order to avoid addiction, you're just going to have to live in pain.
Right. Well, sadly, again, I agree with the comment on pharma. Pharma started going around and actually doing direct advertisement to consumers saying Vicodin is a very safe medication which will take
right.
care of all your pain.
Right. But so now we know that. So where are
right.
we now?
Right. Here's where we are now. You are correct. You are absolutely correct. There are some situations where you're going to have to live with pain, which is 1 or 2. A young 17-year-old, post removing of all their wisdom teeth, they can, have the cold ice chips and cold compressors and Tylenol and stay home and have some TLC and live with a one or two level pain for 3 days. Someone who just, you know, had minor abdominal surgery without, you know, actual cutting, you know, those laparoscopic surgeries,
yes.
All they need is Tylenol or ibuprofen for, yes, 48 hours, and they need to just tolerate that pain.
And Lena, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much, and thanks to all of you doctors who called in on this segment. I think everybody learned a little bit more about managing this going forward, as well as filling in some of the history. Thank you very much.